With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to Footballistically Arsenal. I am Boyd Hilton. You are Josh Landy.
I need to forget your surname. Because you always call me Sidekick Josh.
Yeah, I'm not used to saying your full name.
Despite getting married recently, I haven't changed my surname.
Some people do that, don't they? Some dudes do the double-barreled. What would your double-barrel name be?
It would be Landy Bambaji, which is quite cool.
That's quite a mouthful.
It's an improvement. Though, but it would take... The one thing my wife would say, she has to always spell her surname. And I imagine that gets frustrating when you can't just go...
Yeah, that's
Hilton,
annoying.
People aren't going to go, oh, is that with a Y or something?
No, Boyd, they do. Sometimes they do Boyd, though.
What do they suggest for Boyd?
Oh, I mean, you know, the old Starbucks ordering thing when you give them a get Poit. Poit.
But isn't that deliberate so that you take a picture, post it on social media, and it reminds. It's got to be deliberate,
No, accidental. I've used to spell it out, so I give them the challenge of working out.
Why don't you say Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang? And then they could try and write that across the side.
Maybe next time. We'll see how that goes. You should say you are a married man now. That's a big change in your life.
We addressed it two weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
Briefly, yeah.
I forget. All these things merge into one, Josh.
Yeah.
It's all a blur.
I mean, compared to Wenger leaving, it's a very minor thing on this podcast it's probably second to it.
I'm not sure if I ever asked, though, whether your wife, the extent to which your wife is fine with you devoting quite a lot of your life to football.
She's okay with it. She came actually on Saturday.
Oh,
she'll probably come like once, twice a year. And she,
by the way,
she can't be coming to like Spurs and Man United and Man City and Liverpool. But Burnley at home on the opening day.
Yeah. Let me just say, by the way, I wasn't being incredibly sexist there. I happen to know because I once walked back from here.
Yeah, you've met her.
I met her, and she was definitely slightly askance that you were doing something football related.
It's a big part of part of my life.
Anyway. We should welcome our other guests.
We
are joined by staunch guest, loyal to perhaps to a fault, to both Arsenal and this podcast. Gilad Kestenbaum is here.
Evening, Boydo. Lovely to see you.
Lovely to see you.
Josh.
Thank you very much. And we've got a new guest who is not only a guest and an Arsenal supporter, he also runs the very application that is currently sponsoring this very podcast called Match Pint. Harry, welcome. What's your surname, Harry?
Thanks for having me. It's Courton.
Courton.
Interestingly, a lot of people do kind of ask me to spell that out, which I think is a relatively straightforward surname.
Except it could be Courton, Courten. No?
You hit the nail on the head the first time.
Okay, yep. There you go. Or could even be Caughton. You know, I'm starting to sound like, do you watch Curb Your Enthusiasm?
Yes.
He spells out people's names, doesn't he? That's one thing he does. He loves spelling out a name, a difficult name.
We can start doing it.
Let's start doing it, yeah. So I'm quite proud to follow in Larry David's footsteps and go Courton. I got right first time.
Were you there for the opening home game of the season, Boyd?
Yes, thanks for moving on. I was there for the first time.
Did you find something to do pre-game that wasn't the angel option, the restaurant that's gone?
First of all, Dermot couldn't make it.
He's lazy.
He went to the cricket. I mean, I don't think I'm telling tales out of court.
Controversial.
Apologies. I know it's controversial, but you know, I think he was invited ages and ages and ages ago to go to the cricket.
Right.
The wherever it was, fourth day of the
Had
test.
Had it been the North London Derby?
Yeah, so he didn't know in advance they'd be clashing with our first game of the season. So I think he had that commitment to go.
Sure.
So I'm not, but he wasn't there. And two other friends who regularly kind of take his place and dance. And there was no Baldwins either, let me say.
No Baldwins. No,
it was a border and free zone.
Wow.
So, and anyway, I couldn't really, I arrived pretty much on kickoff anyway. I had a little bit of time to look at the new, there's some new redesigned elements.
Well, so what's new? Tell us what's new in club level, because those of us that don't get the opportunity come to spend our time with you.
Subtle, I would say, design improvements to various bars and eating areas.
The Camden beer, the Camden brewery.
Camden beer, I had a Camden beer.
Did you?
Yes.
Half time you get a free one.
Yeah, I get free, yeah. So it was nice.
An improvement?
Definitely an improvement.
Great.
It used to be Heineken, I think.
I think it was Carlsberg, actually.
Carlsberg.
And I'm glad to inform everybody that there is no other option now. Camden Town is...
Yeah, Camden Town's good.
Yeah.
That's where it's at.
So I was impressed with that. And I'm not a huge beer fan anyway, but I did partake of one.
Well, it's free, isn't it?
It's half free. Time. I mean, all the drinks are free. You could have had a nice white, it's usually a horrible white, to be honest, or a rank red. But I had the Camden beer, and it was nice. But big news on the veggie burger front.
What's happened?
Now, I meant to take a picture of it, but I forgot. Instead of the old kind of two-inch-thick bean burger thing that they've been doing for years, they've gone down... They're calling it a dirty beetroot burger.
Dirty
beets.
What's dirty
you know,
about
dirty
it?
Dirty is this phrase they use now for, like, dirty burger meat.
Should ask. Harry's a youth.
Yeah. Harry, you're
millennial types.
Yes. Yeah, you are very millennial, clearly.
Compared to us.
You might be younger than millennial, pre-millennial.
Is there such a thing? Generation Z? Not quite.
So a dirty burger is like a particularly cool, good burger.
Is that a selling point? Because to me, that sounds terrible.
Right, well... You're like me. I mean, you're younger than me. I'm an old man. I'm aware of a dirty burger because you get this like, you know, there are actual restaurants that are kind of dirty burger.
Meat liquor.
Soho House, meat liquor. Like. Soho House sells them a lot. It basically means, you know, you don't just get burger, you get cheesy, runny, cheesy stuff with it. And
What comes with the burger and how much is it?
Well, it was $11.50, I'm pretty sure.
So was that the same price?
$11.50. I think
Sounds
it's gone
familiar.
Up a bit. I think that's not including chips.
No
well,
chips.
I don't know. Maybe it was. I don't want to be unfair to the ludicrous people who run our catering.
I'm going to do a quick look on Twitter in case anyone
maybe
tweeted about it on Saturday.
I'm furious myself for forgetting to take the photo. But it's like a beetroot based veggie burger. Vegan. It was vegan, which I think last year the traditional bean burger. What you'd think the bean burger was vegan. I'm not sure if it was, but this is clearly vegan. They're going down the vegan route.
Okay.
And it looked fine. I didn't have one, by the way. I didn't eat one. But it looked perfectly nice. And you know, it looked like an upgrade to me, anyway, on the basic inch thick bean burger, which is always too thick and a too thick a crust. Harry,
what better way to start a home game than a Camden beer, followed by a
dirty beetroot burger,
and a rank red.
Yeah,
I can't find anything on Twitter, I'm afraid.
No.
I've typed in dirty beetroot. There's a lot of random tweets, but unfortunately none of them seems to be relevant to the Emirates Stadium. So,
can I just say,
isn't
the concept of a dirty bean burger a bit of an oxymoron? Because when you put dirty before a food item, it tends to mean that it's going to be slightly unhealthy and relatively tasty.
I think one can only assume, one can only assume that, you know, the kids think it's an attractive proposition. You know that it's going to be more fun. You know,
not for me
inherently, but not for me either. I mean, I didn't have one, so it's clearly not fun. But anyway, it was good. It was good to be back.
Great.
I thought the atmosphere was pretty good.
Atmosphere was excellent.
Yeah, yeah.
Were you there? Not there. Not there this time.
I think I think there's a number of fan groups now that
Ashburton
work on the
Army.
Yeah, yes,
Ashburton Army.
Yes.
Clock 26, I believe, is a home or certainly pre-game. I think that's where they are in the concourse.
Yeah,
it's a lot of young millennial types.
Yeah, they had a drum, didn't they?
I didn't. Yeah, but I'm right at the other end.
Oh,
so
okay.
Did you see? Because you're nearer that.
Well,
side.
I heard
did
the drum.
Could you hear it
a few times
during the game?
During the game, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I didn't really.
I think it was the drum. Anyway, there was like going.
Sounds like a drum to me.
Like that.
I mean,
Me tapping the table. So, yeah, I thought the atmosphere was good. But, I mean, it should be for
it
the first game again of the season.
First
I mean,
game, we were top of the league yeah. I mean, the, for the, about
the,
an
the
hour.
Optimism coming into that game as well.
Right.
Summer signings,
yeah.
et
cetera. Yeah.
If it's not optimistic, then good atmosphere. It never will be.
No, exactly, yeah. And if you're not optimistic, I mean, there are still some idiots who aren't optimistic. But as a young, I always ask this for new guests, but particularly in your position as a young, thrusting Arsenal fan.
Can we clarify for the audience? The audience might think we've got like a 12-year-old with us. Just because we haven't clarified. How old are you?
I'm 24.
24, right, I mean, okay. Right. So you were there for, you know, you're going to ask a Wenger-related question.
Of course,
question.
Yeah. Of course. Late, what was your late Wenger attitude? Were you fully behind him?
So you were 9 when we went unbeaten.
Blimey.
That's what I'm working on. I just want to just put into context.
Yeah. But you grew up, presumably, yeah. Arsenal for you was Arsene Wenger, I mean.
Yeah, yeah. No, for my whole life, yeah, since wow. I was 1 year old. And? I was always fervently behind him.
Yeah.
I thought it was disgusting how he actually
disgusting
ended up leaving.
Really?
The club. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
I'm liking Harry.
I think Josh is going to want
Josh
Harry on him more often whilst yeah. me and Boyd.
Albeit though, I think if he'd have left 2 seasons prior, we'd most probably be in a better position now.
Right. I agree with that, yeah.
But that's not to say...
Josh wouldn't countenance him leaving 2 years before.
Do you know, the funny thing about Wenger is that the first 2 games have shown me how much shit and lies we've put up with the last 10 years when you see, say, the team that we can now put out, the signings that have been made, what was done this summer.
Where did you get that from?
In terms of what, as in the last 10 years when we were told that we couldn't sign this one, we couldn't do that. And
is
now,
that Wenger or the people above? Is that Rouse and Lahey and Edu coming in? Because Wenger, I am convinced, no better saying
than something I read last week is that Raul and Emery have made Wenger and Gazidis look like the Chuckle Brothers in one transfer window. Not only from who they've signed, but also from who they've sold and how much they've recouped from each one.
We've had it on pretty good authority that, you know, people who seem to know, Wenger spent the money he had, and he might have spent it badly, and he might have made mistakes, you know, and one of them wasn't in the 18, Mustafi on Saturday, talking a bit. But I think he spent the money he had. Now, how efficiently that money was spent, and there was a wonderful Twitter thread, which I won't read out all of it, by Swiss Ramble last week, talking and breaking down how Arsenal, with the with the transfer budget we had, were able to use it as effectively as we had. But I don't know if that's necessarily... That shouldn't have been Wenger's side of the club. Maybe that's a huge damning on Gazidis and how the money was spent.
I'm not sure what Killer was getting. My feeling is, what you're getting at, is not so much the strict... budget year in, year
exactly.
out. It's the decision making.
It's the decision making.
And particularly
more than
the lack of decisiveness that, if you're talking about sources, anyone who worked at the club who you speak to for the last 10 years, you know, will tell you that Wenger's lack of decisiveness when it came to signings was painful and excruciating. And, of course, he wouldn't deal, as we discussed, I think, last week before, with the super agents, which means he was essentially ruling the club out because of his own personal morality, which you could admire. I don't get me wrong, fine. But he was literally, we were barred from buying pretty much the best players in the world or anyone even close because they, of course, are attached to super agents. So he had that, he did run the club for touch. So that's what I think Gilles
exactly
was
and also
and I totally agree
and I also think that now having been to that first home game of the season, whilst we still have many flaws which I'm sure we'll get into, I don't remember being this excited in years in terms of, say, not only the squad that we can now choose from, but also every game I feel like we've got a good chance.
Yeah, which was the reason, I'm very glad you mentioned that, because that's the reason I wanted him to go in the end. I didn't want him to go because I thought anyone could do a better job. I didn't want him to go because I thought he was ruining our club forever. I didn't want him to go because I thought he was, you know, because I thought the club would be transformed as soon as he left. None of those things, which often get put out. There's loads of, you know, loads of ludicrous statements that Wenger obsessive still trot out about people who wanted him to go in the end, the last few seasons, as you say, 2 seasons before he left would have been good. All I wanted was a new broom, a new sense of freshness and excitement, and that's exactly what...
And we've got it, and this year there's pressure, because now this is his
agreed.
Spending, and we probably should finish fourth with what we've got.
Yep. Of course.
If we don't, it'll be interesting whether he stays.
You've still got the same moronic obsessives. And like fan obsessives of him and other players as well. Now you get this. I had this. I'll talk about what happened to me on Twitter over the weekend. Who are so attached? They cannot conceive of the club doing well without him. And they're even going as far as like finding weird reasons and finding weird reasons why they're not happy even now with our greatest Doctor season in 10 years and, you know, nitpicking over stuff they never would have pointed out if anything had happened under Wenger. It's comical to me. And I kind of feel sorry for them because they're going to have to deal with some pretty, I think, they're going to have to deal with some pretty good news. And they're going to be like pained. It's going to be painful for them.
I couldn't believe that we hadn't won our opening two games.
It's extraordinary, isn't it?
Was it 9 years, 10 years?
10 years.
Yeah, ten years. It's an amazing stat, actually, that.
And a fairly embarrassing stat considering our Arsenal. But anyway, moving on to the specifics of the games. You watched the game.
Yes.
You weren't there.
Yeah, of course.
I, of course, in traditional manner, was there. And I also rewatched the whole thing back on BT Sport UHD. and here's an interesting thing about the whole thing, right? I enjoyed our performance, and I thought, like, in fits and starts, particularly in the second half when Pepe came on, we played some really attractive attacking football.
Magnificent nickname already for Pepe, though, if you don't know it. Valerie.
That's good.
Why don't you make a fool out of me?
Yeah.
Ben me,
yeah, that's good. Yeah, I did see that. Thank you. I thought in the second half, we kind of, you know, now people are pointing out that, so the stats are that Burnley had more shots than us, and they did have a lot of chances. Mm-hmm. You know, but we created, I think, more chances than we often do in this situation where we're playing a team. Burnley are very, very well laid out. They're very, they're very kind of compact, aren't they, and hard.
Sean Dyche-ian.
Exactly, Sean Dyche-ian. So I think they're going to embarrass some big teams this season, like they have done in recent years. And I know we've got a really good record against them, but for me, I thought it was a really promising performance. But especially, you've got to take into account that the manager, the coach, has got to knit together his best lineup and to try and incorporate the new players. Pepe brought in his second half, which I thought was the best thing to do because, you know, clearly he was a bit rusty and he's got to ease him in. And I just thought, and obviously there are flaws in our game, but I had people saying to me, oh, our build-up play was terrible. One person said, someone else said, you know, because of the XG, our XG was worse than theirs and it's rubbish. And, I'm annoyed about that. I hate that bullshit. And, you know, but I'm sorry, we won the game. We were fairly, I thought, the game management was good, generally, and we saw some really good, in fits and starts, very promising attacking play, better than our attacking play has been in recent times, because I think it's been a big issue, is getting the ball up the pitch to, of course, our brilliant strikers. That was my feeling.
I agree with you, Boyd, and I think the performance of Ceballos,
is that how you pronounce it?
That was incredible.
Yeah, exactly. I honestly, that performance was world-class performance in terms of, it wasn't only his passing and movement, it was also the chasing down of balls. He did everything that a fan wants to see in terms of that. He would pick up the ball from defence, he would find a player, he would make the run off it, and then the second goal epitomises, I think, a big reason why Arsenal fans don't like Ozil, because he brought everything to the game in terms of his, say, passing, but then he also does the hard work, the nitty gritty of chasing after. And he, in essence, made that great second goal. And his delivery was great. I mean, all his corners, it always found a man. I think, will have a huge, huge, huge season for us. And he could be the difference maker for us in terms of setting up the goals that we need.
Yeah.
He was pretty incredible, wasn't he?
He really was, yeah. It was great to see, obviously, in his first start. There's always a bit of, when you're not sure how someone's going to quite perform on the day. I've got some stats here about him.
Oh, go on. We like a stat.
Attempted 4 take-ons, completed 100%, made 97 passes with 90% pass accuracy. Obviously, 2 assists and 3 shots. He's only the third Arsenal player to assist 2 or more goals on his first Premier League start.
Nice. Who are the others?
I know one of them is Ray Parlour.
One for Pelé.
And can you guess who the other one might be? It's a current player.
Ozil.
No. May or may not be a starter.
Mm.
Interesting.
We might get onto him a little bit later.
Shaka.
Henrik Mkhitaryan.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. Those are good stats. Someone else kind of going on about Ceballos saying, oh, you know, he didn't have a killer pass. I was like, I think
I
think he did. I mean, literally, as you say,
I mean, even that ball to Monreal for the goal that was just, I mean, that was just
Fantastic.
Sensational. Yeah. So that was Xavi-esque.
The big question about Ceballos is, Josh, surely, A, would he, if Xhaka and Ozil had been available to play, would he have played them? Would he have played one or other of them instead of him? And B, does his arrival, because I think, there was some debate again on social media about what position he was playing in. And if you listen to Unai Emery after the game, he said he started him kind of in the 8 position. No, he started him in the 10 position-ish, like a quite advanced position, while Willock was back, kind of further back than he has been playing in recent weeks. And then he moved him in the second half later on to kind of further back for it to get even more of the one he was already getting. But whatever fucking position he played in, he was gigantically brilliant. One of the best debuts I've ever seen. Standing ovation at the end. I mean, it was absolutely extraordinary.
It was brilliant. The crowd were completely with him from, you know, the first couple of minutes. And, you know, the physicality he showed was incredibly impressive when he was sort of getting roughed up and his, you know, demanding the ball. Danny Murphy did a great breakdown, actually, of him sort of coming deeper and deeper on Match of the Day 2, talking, or maybe it was just Match of the Day, talking about the way he wanted and was clever enough to go and find space and go and get the ball. It was really exciting because you weren't really like, has he not been good enough for Madrid? Probably not. Obviously, you're talking about a top team in Europe.
He played quite a lot of games.
Played a lot of games. Like, but obviously, for Zidane to go, we don't need him next year. But enough where they're not letting him go, where we've paid a couple of million to have him for the season. Obviously, with the view, they're probably going to want him back. And already I'm starting to be like, oh, we're going to get to the end of next summer and be like, oh, fuck, he's got to go back to be part of Real Madrid. But let's love and enjoy him while we're there. What your point there about, would he have played with Xhaka? It's too early to say. I've got no idea what he's thinking as a result of pre-season.
The bigger question now, we've seen how brilliant he is what the fuck happens to Ozil? People are saying, oh, wait a minute, he should be in between Ozil and Xhaka or whoever you want. Because clearly he's a very adaptable player, can play. But
is there anyone though in the working environment that is ill more than Mesut Ozil? I mean, it's pathetic.
We don't know what's going on. I still feel like we haven't been told the whole picture of this Ozil Kolasinac situation. I've got no idea that was circulated about Kolasinac's wife fleeing the country. I have no idea if that's true. Did you see that on Facebook? I've got no idea if it's true. And there has been
he did play anyway. So I mean,
I'm saying there's so little information about what's gone on there.
I know.
They just still wonder, is he all right to play? Is he in the right mindset?
Well, but
maybe it's different. Maybe just because Kolasinac was involved in that element, maybe it was more about Ozil and we just don't know.
We were told he was ill specifically. In fact, there was a very funny moment.
That's the easy way.
We've been told that an awful lot before.
Hang on. What we've also been told is that Mesut Ozil is a sort of footballer who, if he's just not feeling 100%, would rather not play.
Yes, we were told that.
And that's not necessarily the case with all footballers. So,
no.
As they said on Love Island or something, it is what it is.
It is brilliant. But here's my question. Does Ozil...
Harry got that one.
You know, I got it. Yeah,
millennial
reference. Honestly, straight over my head.
Of course you got it, boy. It's your job to get that sort of thing.
Absolutely. Does Ozil now find himself surplus to requirements, particularly with the arrival of Ceballos?
No.
Is there anything... Wait a minute. Let me finish the question. Is there anything that Ozil can do that Ceballos can't do?
Are you getting overexcited by an hour and a half against Burnley? There is a danger here.
I think, though, that you can spin that around and say, this shows, though, for the first time in a long time, the options that we have. I mean, because it's nice to have someone of the calibre of Ozil that you can call upon later on. Similarly, I thought Torreira, when he came on, it's lovely to have someone like Torreira, because I think Torreira, I mean, Willock played, I thought he played better in a deeper position.
Yeah.
And I think that Torreira will also have a big season in terms of, he started off great last year, petered out, but he's a good player to have as that holding, driving forward midfielder. So we have a lot of options in the midfield and strikers.
But you have to have, don't you, Harry? I think you have to have a team in your mind as your best team, don't you? Pretty much.
I think
Liverpool and City, out the big... the big shining lights of Premier League football. Everyone knows what their first teams are,
I think we've got to assume that Pepe will come in to that starting team and that Nelson and Willock will probably drop out at some stage.
Yeah.
And then the centre-back, say, Luiz, obviously, apart from that early pass across goal, which almost went in.
That was over-exaggerated.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I know, but it was funny, though.
I'm not sure what you guys think, but I think Luiz is a great signing in terms of, I know he's got an error in him, but it's nice to have someone who's been there, done it, won it, and he, you could see the leadership during the game.
Spread a couple of balls as well.
I think they would have. I think Burnley would have scored more goals if he hadn't been playing.
We just have to stop this bullshit passing out of the box. We are not
good enough. We are 100% like, and David Luiz in his interview after the game spoke about it, about the encouragement, and that's the way they're going to play.
It's complete madness. I mean,
but do you remember we had this last year? This is the weird thing. Do you remember? I don't know if you remember, Harry. So when so the beginning of last season when Unai had just arrived.
But it's even more different this year because you can be in the area at a goal kick.
I know.
I don't think we managed to get one move going from that. And when you and Burnley are good at pressing, but once you start playing Liverpool, teams like that, we will start to concede. And what's the point? Why would you put yourself under? We're not Manchester City. We're not Barcelona.
Like keeping the ball.
Yeah, I think traditionally we have been a team that keeps the ball and does try and play out from the back. So I think if you've got players like Luiz that's probably been drilled to do that over the past couple of years, then why not flaunt it?
I think the crowd did turn at the end, they were cheering when we did the ball. I almost admire
that sort of pass, like a couple of yards away.
The problem is that the other defenders can't. Yeah. They're not. I mean, even, you know, I just don't think, I think he wasn't the problem. He was fine with it. It was the others that just can't.
Socrates almost had a heart attack.
Particularly Socrates. Seems to, and of course we know
how Maitland-Niles is, you know, pretty comfortable on the ball. He wanted it.
I think Maitland-Niles is still defensively hugely problematic.
Yeah. But he wants the ball.
He's a ball-playing fullback.
I know, but I still think like he gets nervy. I feel it seems to be because he's basically being asked in that setup, in that very Pep style setup where the goalkeeper's carrying the ball and the two fullbacks stand, don't they, either side of the goal, very rigidly in a kind of right. We are now playing out from the back.
If you didn't know before,
and because Burnley rushed on immediately, but in that situation, I felt Maitland-Niles. I mean, I think both fullbacks didn't seem comfortable with it, and this goes and again. So we did this last season without bearing in mind the rule change, but we also did it when we had Cech started. I'm pretty sure, if I remember rightly, you know, the season before Leno became the regular, and it didn't work with him either. Leno's better at it than he is, but I'm not sure if the rest of the defence are. And we gave up on it halfway through the season, pretty much. And then in the end, we kind of gave on a little bit. I haven't measured the stats minute by minute, but I'm sure my feeling was in the last kind of half hour, 20 minutes, we kind of had much more kicks, goal kicks up the park, you know, than religiously relying on that thing. And I agree with Gilad. It's like you can't persevere with it if it's clearly going to let in the opposition to come at us and probably take the ball off us and score.
Well, we'll see. We'll see what they do Saturday. That'll be an interesting place to be brave and do it.
But before we go to the break, can you answer my question as to whether Ceballos' incredible performance and arrival and general all-round ability to do all kinds of different things in all kinds of positions raises an even bigger question mark to Ozil? Or are you in those pure Ozil fanboy people? You know, there are Twitter accounts. I was looking at the people who are slagging me off because I tweeted basically saying Ozil and what's his name? Xhaka, not available, blah, blah, blah. And I said, no one's noticed, you know, after the game. I said, you know, slightly jokingly. And everyone was like, oh, you idiot, everyone noticed. We still missed them, even though, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then you look at the Twitter biogs of these people, and it literally says, like, Ozil, Xhaka, you know, Iwobi. They're fans of these individual players. That's why I call them cultists. They have cult following. And they're not even fans of Arsenal, some of them. They're just like fans of. They're obsessive about.
I don't think we missed either of them.
But I definitely don't think we missed either of them.
Yeah.
You could make a case for missing Xhaka more because maybe he would have helped more that bringing it out from the back. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not convinced that he does, though. But I definitely don't think we missed Ozil, and I wonder going. And I am being harsh about him, and people will have slag me off for it. But I do think surely Ceballos has got. I don't know if they can play together. Maybe they can. But would you surely pick Ceballos over him if that's the decision?
I mean, during last season, there are a lot of times when after the game, you know, someone would remind you that Ozil was out yet again, supposedly ill, and you just think to yourself, I did not notice his absence whatsoever. And what I'm interested to see about Ceballos is, you know, obviously it's way too early to judge him yet, and he's had a tremendous debut. I just fear, and it's definitely a little bit premature, I'm aware of that, I hope he's not one of these players that can only really turn it on against the small teams at home, just like Ozil.
Yeah.
So I think if they are relatively similar players, type of player, then I'd much rather have Ceballos in.
Mm. I mean, I don't think that. I think Ceballos is a completely different player. What I mean is, he seems so much more adaptable, and his skill set seems to be so broad to me that I think he can do what we have. And I know
I even loved his celebration, from the challenge, which led to the goal. And he's not interested in the goal.
Yeah, that was great.
It was brilliant.
Yeah, but you know, people talk about how, I mean, because really, City and Liverpool don't really play with a traditional number 10, do they? It's only us. We kind of have been playing with Ozil as that 10. Most of the time, incorporating him in our team in the last few years, and I don't feel it's been particularly great generally as a move. Now I feel like the setup is going to be also not really necessarily inclusive of a 10. You might be 4-3-3 or whatever. So I feel it's good news, and I'm not saying this just to slag him off. I just feel like having Pepe, Ceballos, or Aubameyang, Lacazette,
that's a fucking
attacking unit.
It's great. I just think you might be writing off Mesut Ozil's contribution a little bit early.
I'm happy for him to stay, by the way. People talk about, you can't have him on the bench because he's playing only 350
grand. No, he'll have to be on the bench.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's fine, isn't it? I don't care.
He'll have a contribution.
I mean, he can come on. He's not
really. Do you think he can really make an impact on a game off the bench, though?
I mean, in theory. I mean, I'm not sure he necessarily has that often, but occasionally, you know. I think I don't see why he shouldn't, you know. If his thing is, you know, if one of the other creative players is tiring, then you bring on fresh legs of Ozil. Why not?
New players around him. It'd be interesting to see how he can, you know, deal with them. Mm. I would still be surprised if, you know, come the end of the season, Ozil hasn't played at least a part, be it starting off a bench of 25 Premier League games. I'm sure he will find a way to be pretty involved this year.
Europa League.
It was good as well, though, to see
Premier League,
to see Lacazette get off the mark for the season. Obviously, it wasn't as good of a goal as Aubameyang's, but he showed a lot of perseverance there.
Great finish. Strong.
Yeah, fantastic finish.
And Aubameyang's goal was just in terms of, it made me think of, you know, Sunday League, when the best player in a Sunday League team just walks through and has that shot. And Aubameyang, he's making it look so easy at the moment. If we finish, I wouldn't be surprised if he scored 30 plus this season in the league. I think he's a fearsome striker.
Yeah, it's exciting that we've had the Premier League's joint top scorer last year.
Mm.
You know, he's not top of the scoring charts yet, but 2-2. And just feeling like we've got someone who could score every game.
Yeah, it's incredible.
It's massive.
Yeah, it's fantastic, isn't it? Before we go to the break.
This break has taken a while.
I know, it's taken a long time. I keep thinking of things I mean to say. Just sorry. But in the Beach Coach, Martin Keown, I want to talk briefly about Martin Keown as expert pundit. He's weird, isn't he? I think he's one of the weirdest. Like, I'm not saying right or wrong, or I think he did get some embarrassing fact wrong that some people pointed
out
to him.
I think that Martin Keown is trying to portray himself as a massive intellectual, in terms of he sometimes comes out with, firstly, words that don't make sense, as well as that what he's saying doesn't make sense either. And he kind of gets himself into a position where no one in the studio knows what he's talking about, but everyone has to agree.
Right, exactly. That's exactly it. And he wavers between kind of using his Arsenal, clear support of Arsenal still, as a kind of almost amusing reason to kind of slack off the team almost too much. I think he goes that way of almost being too negative and critical. He was very critical of our performance during the game. Like, at one point, he was started going out, have a game, go, well, Aubameyang, right? and you know, like, he's not holding any touches. What's he doing out there? You know, he's ineffectual out on the wing, blah, blah, blah. What a stupid thing. And then, of course, he scored a minute later and scored a great, hugely brilliant goal. And just moments like that, but lots of money. He was being really weirdly critical, I thought. Anyway, that's a detail. We should now, Josh, you'll be pleased to know, go for a break. And afterwards, we'll talk more about the game. And we'll hear about Match Pint. What is Match Pint? Harry will answer all our questions. And we're back from the break. So we should say, if you've listened to our last two podcasts of our first two podcasts of the season, we've mentioned that Match Pint is sponsoring us, and there's a whole, you can get the app and log in, and you can predict. There's a game of predictions where you can predict the games, and you can
find out the nearest place to watch your game.
Find out the nearest place. But Harry, explain all. What? How does it work? What is it? Etc.
So Yeah, we've developed this brand new game for the 2019-2020 season, Premier League season. And it's, the game is called the Budweiser Premier Predictor. And it basically allows you to make the televised games even more enjoyable than they already are. So if you're watching it in the pub or if you're watching it wherever, you can just basically go and log it, get onto Matchpoint and set your predictions for each of the televised games. If you hit the score nail on the head, you win a free Budweiser there and then, and you can redeem that in the pub during the week or during that weekend while you're watching the game or whatever. So yeah, I mean, you guys have got your own league.
Yeah.
You can join the league with the code FBAR, I think.
It's great.
We love a prediction on this podcast.
We do love a prediction.
Yeah.
And do you remember what mine was?
Did you get it
right? Yep, spot on. 2-1.
Did I say 3-1, I think?
Yeah, and I think Dan Robot said 5-0, which Robot was slightly optimistic.
Bonkers, yeah.
So, there's plenty of great prizes that you can win as well as beer. So we're giving away loads of match tickets for Arsenal and every club.
Club level, and can we get a beetroot burger?
I'll have to check that, actually.
Okay. That would be extraordinary if it was true.
Okay. A dirty beetroot.
I'm more interested in the beetroot, beetroot burger.
Yeah.
And
the app itself, the match plan, is basically all about finding a pub near you which showing the football.
Yeah, so it's nationwide and in the Republic of Ireland currently. So if you're anywhere in the UK, we've got pubs in cities, in towns, in villages, literally Land's End to John O'Groats, we've got a pub.
So if you find yourself on a weekend away and you need to be watching Arsenal,
It
can tell you the nearest place to go and do so.
Absolutely, yeah. It's one of the key life skills nowadays. So,
exactly.
Do check it out.
And we'll be doing this prediction league all year, right?
Yes. Yes, I forgot to do it this weekend. I did it the first weekend, and I forgot to do it. I'm just being honest. But I will remember to do it from now on.
I'll make sure we remember.
Busy build up.
Everybody loves a free beer, so.
Exactly.
But I mean, I haven't actually been doing too great so far.
Oh.
What was your prediction for Saturday, Harry?
My prediction was a bit left field for Saturday. I went 3-2.
Okay.
To Arsenal.
Well, you had this margin.
I was expecting sort of a bit more on the attacking front from us, and I thought our defence would be a lot leakier. I would put 2-1 for the Newcastle game to Arsenal.
Okay. Again, the right margin.
So I'm getting there. You get points for the right margin. Obviously, that can knock you up the league a bit. Right. But what would you guys think for the Liverpool-Arsenal game this weekend?
Well, we do that at the
Harry,
end.
Traditionally, we do that right
now. Okay.
So
we'll be back for that.
Let's not change the whole setup of the podcast. And we will fully predict. Fully and frankly.
I wanted to ask you, Robin Van Persie was in the studio. I don't know if you saw.
Yes, I did.
Any of him. I only obviously saw it on social media afterwards.
Yeah.
It seemed a very staged point. You know, he's now retired.
Yeah, it was weird. It was like
Jake Humphrey dramatised it as best he could.
I think
the best way of putting it.
And they're really clearly, you know, they've signed Robin Van Persie, who they consider to be a good signing. I beg
for BT. I agree.
He's not great. He's not great pundit. I mean, he's fine, but he's not really likable, which you don't have to be likable. But, I'm not just saying that because of the whole Arsenal controversy. But, so he was asked, fair enough to be asked, because him leaving Arsenal was, you know, one of the kind of most standout transfers and, you know, in quotes, betrayals. You know, he was absolutely brilliant for us, you know, incredible.
The main man.
Main man. And he left to join huge rivals Man United, blah, blah, blah. So Jake Humphrey asked him about it. Because obviously he was talking about Arsenal. He was on there to talk about Arsenal, and you know, I think the subtext was, we've got Robin Van Persie. We've signed up one of our big new signing to the pundit team, Robin Van Persie. Arsenal fans are fucking hate him, and we have to deal with it, right? So they asked him about the circumstances of him leaving, and he claimed absolutely that Arsenal did not offer him a new contract, which not only contradicts the whole history of that saga that everyone assumed, you know, everyone thought he wanted to leave because he was being offered by even at that point, you know, a bigger team giving him more money and more likely to win the league.
And they did win the league.
Oh. So, but not more than that, his official statement at the time said that, you know, he'd been offered a new contract, which, you know, I just don't, so it was an extraordinary. So that, so the annoying thing about it was he was allowed to trot out this story. And I think, I'm not having a go at Jake Humphrey, just, but they just didn't have the wherewithal necessarily to know. But my thinking was, if you're going to ask, clearly, you're going to, on the script is, we're asking him about the controversy of him leaving Arsenal, the fact that Arsenal fans are furious about it, then you've got to know all the facts, haven't you? You've got to have them at your disposal.
Well, this was the quote from his letter at the time that said, "I've thought long and hard about it, but I've decided not to extend my contract. You guys, the fans, have, of course, the right to disagree with my view and decision. I will always respect your opinions." So on the, even just on the production side, it's like you say, you're building this up. Big new signing. First time you're going to ask him a question. He's at Arsenal. Just at least have the letter that he wrote to the fans at the time, rather than have this 7.5 minutes of him.
Wasn't that the famous saying?
He seemed a bit nervous. That was my vibe watching it.
I think he wasn't.
He seemed a bit nervous or getting it out. You know, he probably appreciated, I've got to address it. But
didn't he say during the statement as well that he was, as in, I don't, just from memory, that as a little boy, he always dreamt about playing at, I could be wrong here, and that he had turned down a contract. I'm sure he said that back in the day.
Yeah, no, that rings a bell. Yeah, that absolutely rings a bell. Yeah, it was just weird. It was just, you know, if you're gonna, you're absolutely right. If you're gonna, you know, stage this perfectly reasonable thing to ask him about, and quite right to ask him about, I was quite impressed they did ask him about it and won it. And then when he proceeded to trot out this bullshit, you're like, oh, that's ridiculous. And obviously, everyone was like instantly even more angry with him now.
Go
on.
It just goes to show how much better memory fans tend to have than the footballers themselves, because it might have been an easy mistake for him to forget, but obviously like yourselves,
I take that point, which I deal with a lot of ex-footballers, and I did have a situation, I won't say with who the other day, but they had thought that they had won the FA Cup twice, and I had to like correct them that that's they had amazing. Only won it once, and they were talking about the League Cup. That is amazing that you have managed to forget winning an FA Cup at some point in your career. Really, you've got it confused. But there you go. It happens. But I guess it's just game to game, isn't it? But Robin Van Persie, I don't think he has now got himself into a position where Arsenal fans are going, do you know what? Not such a bad guy. Going to get a great reception wandering around the Emirates next time he's walking near.
That made me think, though, on the topic of ex-Arsenal players, it was lovely to see Freddie on the bench.
Freddie, I mean,
and Emery's failed his involvement.
What a magnificent
and
specimen.
And also, in terms of that, you know, we've got, listen, I'm not saying it's down to him, but already Nelson's come in the team, Willett's come in the team. He was the one who was, you know, nurturing them through the system. I mean, it looks like.
Funnily, you should mention that. So, the funniest, this is what I meant. Thank you for mentioning Freddie, because the thing that stood out in the Martin Keown commentary stakes was. So they had a close-up of Freddie on the bench, looking magnificent, as he does. And Keown goes, someone's been down the gym.
Great
steady,
input.
Steady mind. I thought that was his funniest, best bit.
Emery's quote on Freddie this week was, you know, he's perfect, he helps me a lot, his spirit is very good, he's a gunner. We're very happy with him. He's an assistant like Caicedo, Pablo Villanueva. He is someone we use tactically and technically. We work as a four.
And I just remember that's a good tribute to him. The other thing that was funny on that annoyed me on BT Sport, they had this big thing at the end where, so Joe Cole was the other, I think.
You can hardly string a sentence.
Equally terrible signing.
I like Joe Cole.
I like him as a person.
I think though, I thought his analysis was terrible. You want to hear from your pundits. You want them to tell you something that you don't know already.
Right.
It isn't obvious.
Of course.
And he doesn't do that. He says, oh yeah, that's a goal. That was his saying.
I mean, literally, you've got, you know, Sky's got Carragher, you know, Neville, Graham Souness, you know, all these, and you're like, you got to just think about this more. For me, it's like, I mean, I like BT Sport, a lot of things about BT Sport, but I think their pundits are weird. Michael Owen. I mean, give me a break. Anyway, but what was funny about, so in the after the match, they did this thing about Unai Emery, you know, getting animated on the bench. And they did that really pompous thing about, which some Arsenal fans, to be fair, do agree with. Oh, you know, he doesn't deserve any kudos for being animated on the bench. You know, what difference does that make? Doesn't make any difference to any coach. And Joe Cole, as you said, made that specific point. Doesn't mean he's a good coach. Well, it doesn't mean he's a good coach. It's just refreshing to go back to the very first point we were making about, you know, it's a refreshing change to have someone who's visibly engaging with it and excited and thrilled. And particularly, that Arsenal made a video of it, didn't they? When he celebrated last week.
About Willock's tackle.
And then they made a video of Willock responding to it.
You've got to say that carefully. Him making a video about Willock's tackle.
It's fair to make a video about Willock's tackle. And then they made a video of Willock watching Unai Emery responding to his tackle. And it was great. And that's all fun. It's just fun.
A lot of it is a bit for show. Do you think? But I think in a good way.
That's what Joe Coulson.
It helps the atmosphere, which I think is fine.
Right, exactly.
Because all the people around are like, it gets them animated. Yeah. It helps the atmosphere in the stadium, so I'm okay with it.
If you're a football fan, and of course they all go on about Klopp, don't they? So all these pompous wankers who like think, you know, big animated emojis above them. It sort of doesn't mean
there's Klopp, a lot of groups of people you're angry at today.
I know. This is my chance to vent, and I'm taking it. Apologies in advance. But the same people who think, oh, you know, Klopp's all overrated, and suddenly won the Champions League.
He's magnificent.
And they're going, oh, you know, it's all pretend, it's all fake, all his animation. I don't give a shit. It's entertaining, it's fun, and it has an impact on the atmosphere, as you say. And I think we're getting to know him better.
And it's also such a difference to what we've had for the last 10 years. And that, I think, listen, who knows if it makes you a good manager or not.
It doesn't make a good manager.
Yeah, but as you said, the crowd, the players, if you look to the side and you've had 10 years of, you know, of very easy, and you've got a manager who is losing his shit every time you don't go in for a challenge, it definitely puts you on your toes.
Boy, just one other question just about Saturday. The first time being in a stadium where VAR has been in a Premier League game.
Yeah.
What did you make of it as a spectator, as a fan? I didn't enjoy it.
It's rubbish, isn't it? Because
it is rubbish.
It is rubbish.
You can't celebrate a goal anymore properly because you have no idea.
I mean, so because I completely celebrated our end of
what would have been Nelson's goal,
disallowable,
was
offside.
Yeah. So did I.
Yeah. But to be fair, in that case, the linesman did flag, didn't he?
Yeah,
and then it was just waiting to see if he was right
on the VAR. So if he hadn't have flagged, then you'd really, you know, then the VAR would just been another element of tedium. What I don't understand is that why they don't make it clearer what's happening on the big screen and show you. And I thought they did. I thought they were going to show you when the decision had been made visually. The offside with the line that you see on TV coverage.
I thought they did.
No, but on Saturday? No.
I felt they did.
They did not. I can guarantee they didn't. In fact, the point was made on the coverage. I think someone said, oh, it's
weird. There was one incident I feel they did show a replay.
They didn't show that offside. And one of the points that people made is it's now an advantageous to watch it at home than it is to be in the stadium.
Yeah,
you know more at home. It's fucking ridiculous.
But I don't mind the offside as much as the handball rule, because I just think it's madness now what they're giving handballs for.
I can't see this handball lasting. Yeah, they'll have to do it for the whole year. They have to obviously see it. It has to be the same Premier League season.
Yeah, there's
but
a
already
rule,
everyone's killing
preposterous.
It.
Yeah. There's a rule enshrined in football that says if you accidentally do something, you're penalised for it. That is, for me, that is a game-changing moment of shocking.
But am I right in thinking that had that ball, I can't remember who were the Spurs player, was it Winks, who was next to Laporte when he got his arm to it?
Yeah.
Had that been like brushed off Winks's arm or whoever it was,
it wouldn't have been a penalty.
Then it seems wrong that you can penalise
one.
There was one
the week before. I think it was Bolly at Wolves.
It's a massive rule change. And I don't think it was talked about in quite the same. Everyone's talking about VAR, and that you can like stand in the area now to get a goal kick. I didn't realise until last Sunday. This was
credit the Arsenal programme. There was a list in the Arsenal programme of all the rule changes, and it was in there. And that's the only reason I knew about
but
it.
I'm talking about mainstream media listening to.
I think now
they are, but no, they weren't before.
Shout out Andy Exley at the Arsenal programme.
Oh, okay. Does he do the Arsenal programme?
No, I just personally think.
Forgetting
that. Know him, but
it's a good programme.
Yeah, it is a good programme.
Oh, you get it free, don't you, on your way in up the escalator.
Another great perk of club level. Free Camden beer, free programme. But that rule change is cretinous, absolutely cretinous. But it's the whole way that the VAR, I mean, I'm against it anyway, but the whole way it's working in the ground is stupid. Do you know what? I didn't know this until they're talking about it on Sunday Supplement, I think, that Man United doesn't have a screen in their ground.
Or Anfield, two grounds. Anfield and Old Trafford do not have big video screens at the stadium.
Is that to make sure that...
No, they've never had big screens.
I didn't even realise.
Isn't that incredible?
You do. If you go to Old Trafford, you've just got a thin scoreboard and the same at Anfield.
That's fucking incredible.
They've never had a video.
You know, they were saying it's not going to...
Theatre of dreams. Theatre of cinematography.
Because they didn't have it from the beginning at Old Trafford. It's now really hard to work out how they would have it without getting rid of loads of seats, which is what they're not going to do.
Yeah, correct. They're not willing to do it. But I think what presumably I'm guessing, is that it comes up almost on the scoreboard. A bit like in the old days at Highbury, there'd be those messages. If like someone yeah. had got lost from their dad, it would have a whole
Josh
message.
Josh Landy, please come.
Please come message. To the nearest yeah. steward. Yeah. It would like roll across. That never happened, by the way. that it would roll across the scoreboard. So I assume it says something like, check and VAR. I think it does.
Maybe it's the
checking
someone...
VAR. So it's similar, yeah. but you just don't ever yeah. see a video.
Maybe like someone stands there, like waving their arms about, going, VAR, VAR, it's happening. And, you know, I don't know. But it is ridiculous that have big screens, but
so
I think
theme tune, shouldn't we, for VAR?
I think we this from because I we had a big screen even at Highbury, didn't we?
Yeah.
In the latter stages,
the JVC, of course.
So
it's
I feel like
the branding.
We maybe we were the first team to do. I don't know whether the first team to have a big screen, but that you know our big screen tradition goes back to something to be proud of.
Absolutely. I'm now one of the victims last year when there was the extra row put for your comfort in club level because I'm back row of a lower tier.
Right.
I can no longer see the big screen, so they've instilled. Like oh. smaller screens oh. just above us. So
as long as club
rows,
level are all right. Then.
I see. So wow. now I have quite a good view of yeah, seeing the replays because it's just up to my right. I just have to look
very
up.
Very screen-based.
But I do feel it's slightly claustrophobic now with that extra row.
I was like, with a screen right in your face or something. You know,
no, not right in my face.
How close is it?
Or just like, you know, you have an extra row. I mean, just not able to see a big screen. So I am probably one of only a few hundred, I imagine, in the stadium who can't see the big screen. So I might as well be at Anfield or Old Trafford.
What were you?
Basically.
Before we get to the prediction moment, the critical prediction moment, can I just mention the greatest, the other greatest thing, surely, about the team selection on Saturday? Mustafi nowhere to be seen, not even on the bench.
It was a great photo that he like was causing
yeah.
traffic disruption.
Yeah.
His car
yeah.
turned up that late. That he was like blocking the road, so they wouldn't want to let him through.
Yeah,
because they'd really like put it off for pedestrians. It was a wonderful picture.
I love it that even the police are in on it. That we can't allow him in the 18-man squad.
People just furious with him wherever he is, whatever he's doing. And I know it's.
But
bad.
He did watch the game. He was sat next to Ozil, I think.
But I mean, to not worry about him because it's just like having a worrisome kid, isn't it? That you don't want to ruin anything. You just want to keep him kind of locked away in his own room, not let him. I know I'm being overly harsh, but it is such a depressing factor.
Doesn't matter
shitness.
How bad the injury crisis at centre back gets this season.
Yeah.
I would play a 17-year-old, 18-year-old from
before
him.
Hopefully Mavropanos. Yeah, that's Josh is showing us.
Just showing the picture of
his car. How do people know that's his car? That's a good bit of knowledge, isn't it?
It's got a German number plate, which I think limits the amount of options.
Oh, fine.
It's also a particularly...
So it's either him
or Ozil.
Ozil,
so
yeah.
bound to stop it.
And we know what Ozil's car is from the carjacking incident, of course. Yeah. So maybe that's how it's all played out.
Anyway, he was supposedly blocking the buses. Well, there you go.
And anyone know when are any of our defenders coming back?
Well, they've said that...
I think Holding October?
October and Bellerin October. And Tierney sooner, I think there is a bit of...
Sooner,
it's
really?
It's exciting times, it really is.
Absolutely, 100%. Very exciting. But talking of which, it all could come crashing down to earth, couldn't it?
Well, is it a free hit? That's the question.
What does that mean?
It's Saturday, we go get beat 3-0.
Oh, well, such is the nature.
It was a free hit for Norwich on the opening day, not for the Arsenal.
Wise words, Harry.
Look at our record away at the top.
Are you
six.
Telling me? Hold on. Are you?
It's
telling
a joke.
Me, listen. Are you telling me that if Arsenal lose 3-0 or whatever or 4-1 to Liverpool on Saturday,
I don't think we
Mondays,
can be that upset.
On Mondays, you're not going to be upset, and you're not going to be going on about how
happy boys. I'm not going to over it, but I just.
Well, you're being very chilled about it in advance.
If Alan Alger was sitting here throwing data at us, he would probably tell us we'll be expected to lose by. About
XG.
1.5 goals.
XG.
So we'll go get beat 3-1 or something, and that'll be about what's
interesting,
expected.
Liverpool's XG high. Was terrible. On
they, yeah, correct. Southampton well deserved something from that game, and but for Danny Ings swinging and missing.
I think we're going to pull something out.
Oh, don't. Oh, we've now. Oh, wow. When you say, do you mean like at least get a draw? Is that what you're saying?
At least get a draw there, yeah.
God.
Yeah, no, I really.
I'd be thrilled with a draw. Absolutely thrilled.
Big time.
Do you know what? I would take, you know.
It's a hard one, though, isn't it? Because. To predict because Liverpool aren't as defensively sound so far this season,
but they're great going forward still.
Brilliant going forward, can literally like in a millisecond they can turn it from defence to attack, and you know Sane or whatever, someone's going to score. Mane, Sane. I was getting with Mane and Sane mixed up, and of course Salah and all of that. But equally, I think kind of we're going to score pretty much every game. Yeah. I don't know. Harry, I'm going to go for you for a prediction first. So what you think?
Well, you just hope that, you know, we've had 2 weeks of the season now and you can tell that the players haven't quite clicked with the amount of business that we've done in the window. You just hope that by sort of game week 3, they're just starting to get each other's rhythm a bit better. And I personally think that we can do something over there with Ceballos banging form. I'd be hopeful for...
Hopeful for what? Yeah, but what do you think is going to happen? What do you think is really going to happen?
I think they're going to be leading 2-1 for most of it, and I think we'll get a late equaliser.
Okay. I like that. I like a prediction that actually plots out the narrative of the game. I mean, again, team selection is going to be incredibly exciting and interesting an hour before kickoff. I'm assuming he's going to bring Xhaka back, and I feel it's just within him. So mm-hmm. he seems to rely on Xhaka, and I feel like away, it's unlikely he's going to play Willock and Ceballos and all the forwards that he played. But equally, I wouldn't be surprised if he started Pepe, for example, which could be, you know, because he showed some really good signs. You're raising an eyebrow, Josh. You think I'm mad for thinking he might slot Pepe? I don't know.
Don't see it.
No, okay.
I think he'll be a bit more cautious in the way he sort of puts out the team.
So who do you think is going to... I mean, I'm not asking for the whole team, but roughly.
Well, I think, you know, you might still see sort of... Maybe Mkhitaryan could play as one of those front three. I just don't see him sort of unleashing all three.
You don't think Torreira could come back in?
Yeah, maybe. I just don't see him going Pepe, Aubameyang, Lacazette. I might be wrong.
I think you say free hit, and I'd be prepared to take it as a free hit if we keep the likes of Willock and Nelson and Maitland-Niles in. So if we're going with Niles,
will definitely play.
I think Nelson. I'm not being horrible to him.
He didn't do much.
No.
He'll get more chances.
He deserves more chances, but I feel like in this game you want someone who's going to be a threat. The reason why I think he might pick Pepe is I think he's going to, him running at that defence could be a key. It could help us, you know, kind of defensively in a way, because
Mkhitaryan was so shocking. And Mkhitaryan has been in
Newcastle.
He was so bad.
How many times did he give the ball away?
I just had a quick look. We've conceded 22 goals in the last 6 visits to Anfield, so it's not far off 4 a game. The idea that we're going to go there, and I would love to be optimistic, I often am, but I would I expect a 3-1 defeat. And I don't think we can be too gutted, because then if we come back and we can beat Spurs and take, 9 points out of 12, I think that'd be a great start to the campaign.
So you're saying 3-1?
I'm saying we'll lose 3-1.
What you're saying?
2-1 to Arsenal.
You're saying 2-2.
Sam, Gillard is calling that we're going to have our first away win at the Big Six since Man City? Giroud's got a header. You're calling our first away win in what, 5-6 years?
I like the boldness.
I'm
calling it.
I want to see what... I mean, that odds-wise, that would be exceptionally high.
And Liverpool haven't lost at home for what? I don't know, 2 years or something?
They've won 11 on the spin now in the league.
I don't think they've lost for 2 years, I don't think, at Anfield.
Listen, you've got a big prediction.
No, I like it. I'm fully admiring it.
I think if we start Mkhitaryan, we get hammered 4-0.
Oh, God, yeah.
On Mkhitaryan.
See, team selection is key, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's so shit.
I think we're
he's
going...
Like, he's like this... Sorry.
No, go on.
He's like this sort of relic left over from the Wenger era.
Yeah,
I don't know if you remember, he came as part of that deal where we offloaded Sanchez.
Of course.
Yeah,
we've got him. But to be fair, I mean, we've got more out of him than they've got out of Sanchez. Let's just say that. The most highly paid player in the league. Anyway.
Just Arsenal to win, by the way, for those that are, you know, wanting to go on that. We're 11-2 to even win the game. Any sort of win. Yeah, of course. What would you expect?
Just because those stats that we just trotted out.
And Arsenal to win 2-1, you can get 20-1.
Go for it.
So I
haven't done my prediction yet, by the way. And I'm going...
Which is what? You're going to say 2-2, I reckon. What are you going to say? 2-2?
No, I'm going to say 2-1 to Liverpool.
Oh, okay. Bit more reality.
Do you know what? I'm going to say 3-2.
Well, you'll be putting it in on the match point prediction.
Yeah.
I think it's 3-2.
That way you can always drown your sorrows afterwards.
Of course you can.
Good point.
I'll be winning a free beer with our 2-1 prediction. So
I'm officially saying 3-2. Thank you.
I will get you 5 beers if we win 2-1. Forget the free one from match point. If we win 2-1 at Anfield, you can have 5 free beers whenever you like.
Beautiful.
Can't wait for the game, though. What a glorious...
Looking forward to it. I'm going up to Edinburgh Fringe this weekend.
Are you?
And I noticed... that Tom Rosenthal's show is bang in the middle of the game.
That's annoying.
It's a real shame. I'm hoping to go see it on the Sunday.
Yeah.
Well, I saw that, because I was in touch earlier in the week with Joe Bohr, who has occasionally come and joined us on the podcast. He's got a show up at the Fringe.
Yeah.
But I think they got together to watch the Arsenal-Burnley game on Saturday, because that was a 12:30, nice. Not clashing with Tom. So if anyone is going and wants to see Tom's show at 6:30... up at the Fringe, and I'm also hoping to go and see Wenger ball. Of course, we had Raphael join us on the phone the first week, so I'll let you know how that goes.
Excellent. Good Edinburgh-based parish notices. I'll just remind you that if you want to join our league on the Matchpoint app, it's the code is FBAR, as in footballistically Arsenal.
Yeah, and there's tons of great prizes to win if you come top of that league every month. So
there you go.
See you there. Thanks to Gillard.
Thanks to Gillard. Thanks to Harry. Thanks to you, Josh.
Oh, thank you, boys. It's a pleasure.
Excellent. Bye.
This is a Playback Media production. To listen to all our football podcasts, visit playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.